In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for your coolest conversations on Little Stephen's Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. Today, my guest is Charlie Starr, guitarist, singer, and one of the founding members of Atlanta, Georgia's Blackberry Smoke. Their cover of Bad Company's Run With a Pack is a recent coolest song in the world, and it's from the Bad Company tribute album Can't Get Enough. I'll give it a spin, and I'll be back with Charlie afterwards for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock and Little Stephen's Underground Garage. Little Stephen's Underground Garage, and my guest today for your coolest conversations is Charlie Starr from Atlanta, Georgia's Blackberry Smoke. Their coolest song in the world this week is a cover of Bad Company's Run With a Pack. It's off of Can't Get Enough, a tribute to Bad Company. Hey, Charlie, how are you?
I'm great, Manfred. How are you?
I'm excellent. Happy to be chatting with you. How has your new year been going so far?
Too early to tell.
But I know you got some plans coming up. I was seeing that you're going to be doing some solo shows later on this month, and I'm going to ask you about all that. First, I want to touch base again because we had spoken a few years back around the time of your album Like an Arrow came out. So I know it's been a while, and I know you guys are from Atlanta, but do you mind reminding us where you're from originally?
I'm from just north of Auburn, Alabama, in a little town called Lynette, which is about 85 miles southwest of Atlanta, I guess.
And so my father's family is from Greenville, Georgia, LaGrange, Greenville.
Yeah.
And their roots are actually in East Alabama. Ever been through? In fact, I was born in Warm Springs.
Oh, well, I went to the little White House in Warm Springs where FDR went to recuperate. Right.
Right. Seems like there was a swimming pool there, like in the shape of a bell.
I think so. I got lost in the woods there when I was a kid. I went on a Boy Scout trip, and me and two other 10 or 11-year-olds went out wandering and got lost, and there was like a manhunt for us. And I remember thinking that it wasn't that big of a deal until I saw all the cop cars. And I was like, oh, we did something pretty bad.
Yeah, but you were Boy Scouts, so you knew how to live off the land.
Well, we didn't. We were trying, and maybe we were weeblos. We weren't even like full-fledged Boy Scouts yet. But I remember I told the two other kids, they were terrified, and I was like, I gotta be tough. These guys are scared. And I thought, well, we're gonna follow that funny-looking cloud right there. And that's what we did, and we came up on the. Anyway, what a weird. I haven't thought about that in 40 years.
That is like so. That's so cool. Well, so you were? Did you pursue that? Were you a Boy Scout? Did you do that?
Just for a couple of years. You know, there was a. Because I was living in West Point, Georgia at that time. which is just across the town from Lynette. You just walk through town a few miles and step into Georgia.
Well, that's I looked up Lynette on the Google Maps or whatever, and it had West Point right there. I was thinking, West Point's in Georgia.
Yeah, the state line went through the center of town. When the lottery came along for Georgia, boy, that was really a turning point for those little mom and pop gas stations right there across the state line.
Right. So, your father, let's think here. You're growing up, and your dad was like a bluegrass guy, right? Like a traditional bluegrass guy. And so that means like no electricity. But you were quite an electric fellow, right? So how did that sit with your dad?
Well, I don't think he liked it. He has come around now. I'm 51. At 6 years old, he bought me my first acoustic guitar and taught me G, C, D, maybe E, you know?
Yeah.
Taught me those bluegrass chords. And that's what I wanted to do. I was fascinated with his ability to just pick up a guitar and play songs, you know, play and sing songs. There's a troubadour. And that's what I wanted to do. So he taught me, you know, the rudiments of that. But then I heard Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath and Aerosmith. And I started just hearing the radio, really hearing it for the first time, you know.
And how old were you at that point?
Probably about 10. And none of my friends liked bluegrass. You know, they were like, who's Bill Monroe? I don't want to hear that. I want to hear Led Zeppelin.
Well, at those times when you were making that transition, let's say, or was it like a hard sort of thing where it's that your friends are saying, you know, what is that? Was that a lot of conflict with your dad at that point? I mean, plus you're entering your teen, your preteens, early teens. Was that the way to rebel was with the rock?
Maybe a little, but not really, because I stuck with him too. I wanted it all. I was a glutton, a musical glutton.
Well, you know, speaking of that, there's a great good quote I want to ask you about and ask you to sort of expound on. And it's an interview you did a while back, so let me sort of frame it up here. You're talking about music that you were into growing up, right? And listening to different kinds of music. And the quote is, eventually I came back around and I started seeing so many similarities to the music I had learned. Sitting on top of the world is not only a bluegrass tune, but it's a blues song too. The only thing that mattered was who was playing and singing it. And I think this is an important sort of idea when we think of an idea that's kind of lost these days when we think of different genres of country, folk, blues, even jazz. Can you elaborate on that quote?
Yeah, well, I started to really, I really started to dig for music, and I still do. I think that, anybody that listens to this station does. You know, it never gets old. The digging for something that moves you. So I was in a pawn shop, looking at guitars. I was about, 12 or 13 years old. There's a little store in West Point, Georgia. Not really a pawn shop. That's the wrong way to put it. It was sort of a catch-all store. And there was a man that he sold records and instruments, cassettes and records and instruments. And he was playing this music that really I was fascinated with. And I said, who is that? And he said, that's Jimmy Rogers, the yodeling brakeman, you know.
Right.
The father of country music. I didn't know who that was. I knew who Bill Monroe and Flatt & Scruggs and the Stanley Brothers were, but that was very akin to what I was hearing in some of the bluegrass recordings that my dad had, you know, but a little bit older. And then I went back in there another day and he had on something that was different, and it was probably Robert Johnson. But it sounded very similar to the Jimmy Rogers recording that I heard. Well, this guy... it was two brothers, actually, the Nader brothers, Nader's Music. They saw that I was fascinated with that, with music, and they started to give me pointers, or they gave me direction. And one day, I still have a Mississippi Fred McDowell record that they gave me when I was about 13 years old, riding my bike over there. But they sent me down this blues journey. you know? And so it's that. Anyway, I started to realize, I was like, well, these guys are singing a lot of the same songs that my dad and his buddies sing, you know? Some of the, it's like the, there's like the guys playing the Delta and Piedmont blues that are doing, that would do like the Mississippi Sheiks would do Sitting on Top of the World. And then so would Bill Monroe and his guys. And they were in a different key, and maybe Bill Monroe made them faster, you know? But anyway, that, I don't know if I'm doing a good job of expanding on that quote, but I started thinking to myself at a young age there, I was like, wow, well, all this music is coming kind of from the same place.
Yeah.
But it turns out that it's not just one place. It's a lot of places.
Right. There's a great, Alan Freed.
Yeah.
He has a great quote about music being a river and, you know, these different sorts of rivers, and rock and roll has got all these different tributaries that feed into it, that it's an amalgam of, you know, as we're talking about the early or country as well as blues and all sorts of sort of R&B influences as it develops along, you know, and it makes the, you know, the tributaries pour and come in and form a river, and then the river gets bigger and the river gets stronger as it moves yeah. on forward, moves on ahead. During the summer of 1981, I was in a summer program that was in Valdosta State College. And I was a junior in high school at the time. And the idea for this program was you were like given as though you were going off to college, sort of like an experience of spending time away from home, and you had took classes. And my roommate was Ted Lathang.
Wow. Well, he is one of my best friends.
Okay. So, you know, you know, Ted. And at that time, Ted, he was there. I guess everybody had some area of expertise or whatever. And his was art.
Yeah.
And he had all these elaborate scrapbooks or, you know, all the stuff he was drawing was made incredibly cool. And he was also like a big Jimi Hendrix guy. So he was how old are you when a junior in high school? So he's 17, 16, 17. And he's got it. I mean, he knows Hendrix inside and out. And so he's like one of the first guys you met when you moved up to Atlanta.
Absolutely.
What's the story with you and Ted?
I had been coming up. I had joined a band that was playing in the Atlanta area quite a bit. But I didn't live in Atlanta yet. I still lived in.
You joined what band?
It was a band called the Shambles. There was an Atlanta band called the Swingin' Richards. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember the Swingin' Richards. Yeah.
Super popular local original music, which
yeah.
I don't know if there was a whole lot of that then. The stories I'm told was around that time you're talking about, 81, 82, 83, it was the Georgia Satellites and the Swingin' Richards were the two big Georgia bands playing clubs. Anyway, I started to play with that singer and guitar player and bass player in a band called the Shambles. And one of the guys in that band took me into a music store on Ponce de Leon, called Clark Music, and Ted was there. And I walked over and I was looking at, they had vintage guitars, which I was really getting into at the time. My lust for those was really starting to form. And I was playing an old Telecaster, and I started playing Soul Survivor, Stone song off Exile on Main Street. And he came over and it was sort of like, you know that song? I know that song too. You know, there would be a lot of people in there that probably wouldn't, but we both did. And we became friends immediately.
Played with his band, Voodoo Piston?
For about 2 weeks. Well, okay. His second question was, can you play bass? And I said, sure. And I borrowed a bass and an SVT, and I went and played a couple of things with him in that band, a couple of gigs. It was really complicated because he was in another band with a guy named Tommy Rivers, who was a songwriter who had history with the Satellites, because he and Rick Richards had a band called the Desperate Angels back in the late 70s in Atlanta. They predated the Satellites. So we were playing with that guy, And then Ted and I, we've been really great friends ever since. And we wound up playing in a few bands together.
Well, such a small world, you know.
Absolutely. I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah. So how long was it? You mentioned playing with the Shambles. How long was it between the Shambles and you do a little bit with Ted before the beginning elements of Blackberry Smoke start coming together?
Well, so that was in the early mid-90s when I met Ted. And we played in those bands. And then we had a band called Johnny Three-Leg together with the singer from the Shambles, which was another... Bands were just sort of morphing in and out of one another in Atlanta, you know. And then in about 97, I met the Turner Brothers. And we were in a band with another singer-songwriter from Atlanta who had a record deal. This was the turning point. It's like, oh, he's got... Okay, he has a deal. Like, he's not just going to play clubs in Atlanta. He's going to go make an album for a major label. So we did. We went with him and made that record. And then we had a falling out with him, as band members are wont to do. And I had started to write some songs myself, and that became Blackberry Smoke. We left his band, and in the very first month of Blackberry Smoke, we were a trio.
I wanted to ask you... You said you started writing some songs. Had you been writing songs prior to that all along, a little bit?
A little bit. I didn't think they were any good. I never was really brave enough to show them to any of the guys I was playing in a band with. Maybe a couple, but nothing stuck, you know.
Well, so you had a tipping point with that. What got you to say, hey, you know, I've actually been working on some songs. Why don't we go through them?
Well, I played them for Britt, my late drummer, and Britt was really, he got really excited about songs, more than any drummer I've ever met. He was really into choruses to the point where he was right at home. He was as much at home with Slayer as he was Elton John. He loved drums and loud rock and roll, but if you laid a catchy chorus on him, he was like, he turned into a big teddy bear. And I had written a couple of songs that he really got excited about, and that in turn made me more excited. So I think that was the tipping point.
Well, I know you had periods of time when you were growing up when you were into, you know, not only older styles of American music, but also like The Clash and Replacements. What puts you on the road to the sort of the mix that is Blackberry Smoke? Like when you were writing these, your first songs and showing them to him, well, what was the style, let's say? What were you drawing on? What was coming out of those initial songs?
I don't really know. I think it was... It was drawing from a lot, and I'm from the Southeast, so there's a huge dose of Lynyrd Skynyrd and the Allman Brothers and the Marshall Tucker Band, the Charlie Daniels Band. That's all really couldn't be more important to me, you know. But at the same time, I love the Replacements and the Husker Du and all these, you know. I just love music, and there's I can't really pin down the aspects that I love most, but there are things that speak to me that maybe won't speak to somebody who likes Lynyrd Skynyrd. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, but I think what we do is not like any of that stuff. So maybe it's akin to other Southern rock and roll bands, but it obviously doesn't sound like The Clash. But the first couple of songs, one was called Sanctified Woman, and the other one was called Testify. And I don't know, they're simple, to the point. They're verse, chorus, bridge, solo, out, you know.
What were the titles again? Sanctified?
Sanctified Woman and Testify.
And Testify. So both of those got some religious sort of, you know, background.
Yeah.
Thing in head. And the... What was the role, you know, we've spoken about your father being in bluegrass music. Did you guys go to Are your church going family on Sundays or, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Every Sundays and Wednesday night too.
Well, I picked up on the, what is the, what's the album from last year? So Be Right There. Am I remembering?
Be Right Here. Mm-hmm.
And there's a track on there that the, remind me which one it is, but it opens with a little, you know, a cappella section.
A little bit crazy.
A little bit crazy, right? Mm-hmm. And it's got that kind of a gospel-y feel at the beginning there. Well, let's talk, focus here for a moment on our coolest song in the world this week. It's your version of Run With a Pack, which is a title cut for Bad Company's 1976 album. Your version's on this tribute to Bad Company called Can't Get Enough. First of all, tell me how much you love Bad Company.
Love Bad Company with a never-ending love.
That's a powerful love.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I was a teenager and started to play in band before I moved to Atlanta, I was playing and spent years in cover bands when I was way too young to get in a bar. And learning how to do this. And Bad Company songs were a huge part of that curriculum. And Free and Bad Company. I can't really mention one without the other, you know. Well, and Mott the Hoople, which is where Mick Ralphs came from, you know. So, I mean, maybe one of the first super groups, you know, back then. Boz Burrell from King Crimson. Who I wouldn't get into until much later, but I thought, how could you go wrong? When I was like, wow, this band, both of these bands had Paul Rodgers as their lead singer. How do you beat that?
And so you guys were contacted about contributing a track, and why did you settle with Run With A Pack?
Well, Eddie Trunk called. He's a rock and roll DJ, and he called and been a friend for quite a while, great fellow. And he said, hey, man, can I give your number to Bad Company's management? They'd like you to be involved in this tribute album. I said, yeah, absolutely. And so they contacted me, and the list of songs that were available was pretty short. It was three. I said, well, what could we do? He said, you could either do Run With The Pack. This is at the time. Run With The Pack, Silver, Blue, and Gold, or Seagull. And I said, well, Run With The Pack speaks to me immediately because it's not a ballad. The other two are beautiful ballads, but I think we'll go with the up-tempo one, you know. And it kind of has that runka runka chug that we like. So I immediately thought that's the one.
Well, I know you've got Bron Daler from Macedonia at some percussion to it. And you spoke of the great singing talent known as Paul Rodgers. He's contributing some backing vocals in there as well. How did he become involved with the track?
Well, we recorded it at Mastodon's studio in Atlanta, which is how Bron came in. And Bron's a great, not only a great drummer, but a fantastic singer himself. So Bron came in and we finished it. And we did it in an afternoon. It was, you know, it's a rock and roll song. And so it was
very cool.
It was mixed and gone to mastering by that night. And the next day, it was sent along. And the next day I was contacted and said, hey, can Paul Rodgers add some vocals to the song? To which point I said, absolutely. And so he did. And he sent it back. And when I first heard it, I thought, well, I wish he would do more. So I called and said, man, tell him that he could sing a verse, you know, he could do. And they said, Paul said he didn't want to get in your way.
Oh, man. So I spoke with him several years ago. He had a, whatever the most recent solo album is. And I have to say, what a gentleman.
Oh, wow.
Such a nice conversation and just through and through. So I was going to ask you when you found out he was going to contribute, if you were intimidated at all, but you'd already done your part.
I was done. Yeah. The thrill is still there to think, well, that my vocal is going to be, you know, sitting in there with his. What an amazing thing to happen.
So in the, there's a video that's shot and it gives one the impression that you guys are all doing the, recording the track together. Is that how it really happened, or did you go on and you know, everybody laying down their part individually?
We did. We played it all together. Yeah, he didn't. He was in another studio.
But specifically, yourselves are sitting there playing together. That's great. It's, you know, it's a little video. It's great. There's a lot of, you're actually playing, and there's a little bit of mugging here and there, you know, to the camera, a little wink and stuff. It's really cool. I like that a lot.
That was
okay. Weird. So today's the 9th, and I saw online that you're playing tonight in Atlanta at the Buckhead Theater doing a solo gig. Is that right?
It's an acoustic. I do an acoustic tour every January, and I take my buddy Benji Shanks with me on guitar. And we just have a palate cleanse for the year. Before it gets loud again, we get quiet.
So you're playing mostly, it's like for the balance of the month, a few shows out, mostly in the Southeast, right? I think maybe there's one show in Cincinnati or something like that, but mostly in the Southeast. All right. Well, what are the plans then after that for Blackberry Smoke? Are you 250 days on the year, or what's on the horizon?
No, I think we'll do more like 80, maybe 100. This is our 25th anniversary.
Oh, this year. 2026, 25. Well, happy 25. That's awesome.
Thank you. We have a best of that's out now. It's called Rattle, Ramble, and Roll. The best of Blackberry Smoke. And we kind of were like, before we go make a new album, we just kind of wanted to put this 25 years, you know, here's the flag in the ground, and we'll see where it takes us from here, I guess.
All right. So you mentioned, you know, this is a 25th anniversary this year, this compilation you've got out. But I want to talk to you about a couple of tracks off of last year's album, Be Right There. And the first one is Azalea.
Yeah.
So for those folks who are not from the Southeast, not familiar with what an azalea is, can you explain to them what is an azalea?
Well, it's a beautiful flower, and my grandmother planted oodles and oodles of them, and they look beautiful in the springtime. And I don't have much of a green thumb myself, so I've never been able to, but I'll never forget my grandmother's two favorite flowers. She loved her azaleas, and she had a bougainvillea.
Oh, yes.
That was her favorite stuff. So I was writing the music for Azalea on acoustic guitar in this really cool low C tuning, and kind of fiddling around with it. And I wrote that song with a good friend named Travis Meadows that he and I, we have collaborated on lots of songs for Blackberry Smoke over the years. Great friend from Mississippi. So he understands azaleas as well. But I sang something, I'm just mush mouth, just sort of, you know, making some consonant and vowel sounds, not really words. And he said, "Did you just say Vidalia?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Okay, I didn't think that we should write a song about an onion." I said, "No, I didn't." And then when he said that, I thought, azalea, that's a nice, it rolls off the tongue kind of nicely, you know.
In fact, what I think about azaleas too is they only bloom once a year, and it's just really, really, really beautiful. If you're not familiar with that, I mean, it's a bush. It can be like looking like a bush. What's so sad to me is when I was married, we had bought a house in Tucker, and we had these. Oh, the house is over there on Brockett, on intersection of not Lee Marvin, but Marvin Lee Drive and Brockett Road. It's a corner lot, and these big old trees, and it's big, all these azaleas around the tree, you know? And like the neighbors would, when it was in bloom, people would come into the yard to take pictures in front of the azaleas, azaleas, right? And we moved, and the first thing the new owner said was they ripped all the azalea bushes out.
Oh no!
Because they weren't familiar with them, and apparently this was according to other neighbors later on, they weren't familiar with them, and they didn't wait around for them to bloom. They didn't
know
they were going to bloom.
Ah, they didn't know.
They just ripped them all out, and I was so sad.
Mm-hmm.
And in your song, you know, there's this sort of, oh, I can't think of the lyric well enough here. It's about, you know, learning things, moving on. And so you're singing to an azalea, what it represents. Can you explain any of that?
Well, it winds up being, the song is about a daughter. And it was sort of, azalea is sort of her name in a way. It's not completely pinned down that way, but the idea is sort of twofold. It's that everything can bloom again. One idea, you know, things that turn brown and are and that seem to die can bloom again. And then the other one is that no matter where you go, you can always come back home, because there's that adage that you can never go home again, which that's not true. That wherever you feel home is, and that's where the phrase "be right here" comes in, is home will always be right here. But that's wherever you want it to be. It could be in here, you know.
Well, let's talk about one more track off of "Be Right There," and I wanted to, we'll use this as the exit song too. We'll go out on this. It's the tune "Hammering the Nail." And that I like that part of the chorus, say the phrase, the whole world swings the hammer and I'm the nail.
Yeah.
Drives it home there. Do you mind telling me a little bit about that one? What's sparked you to?
Well, the guy that's singing that song, he's been through it from the very beginning.
Right.
And he kind of goes through and kind of given examples of what people have said to him and sort of laid it out, from the preacher to his mama, to his dad, to the policeman, to the judge. And then basically he's saying, sometimes you're the hammer, sometimes you're the nail. But in his case, he's saying, I'm the nail. I'm tough enough. I can handle it. Bring it on. Whatever you got, swing it at me. Hit me with it. I'm the nail. I can take it.
And that's an important point to bring home here too, because it's not, he's not acting the victim.
That's right. It's the opposite of what you think it might be. There would be tons of songs or ideas about the hammer and the nail, like one or the other. This guy's proudly saying, I'm settled into my role. I'm the nail.
Bring it on.
Bring it on.
Let it be a mighty swing.
That's right. Yeah. Swing hard.
Right. Charlie, man, thank you so much for speaking with me again for our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a listen to Blackberry Smoke, the tune "Hammer and the Nail" in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Was "Hammer and the Nail" from Blackberry Smoke here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. The song is from last year's album "Be Right Here." This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's Charlie Starr for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza and Kurt Baker for producing our podcast. Speaking of Kurt Baker, in addition to his production duties for the Underground Garage, he's still making music, and the prolific Prince of Power Pop has got a new single out called "Undertow Afterglow." It's on Wicked Cool Records, and next week he'll join us to tell us all about the release. It's Kurt Baker next time around on your Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Bye-bye. Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.